and began tending to his horse. Another task he enjoyed. Another task he too rarely was given the chance to do while at home. Behind him, light footsteps rustled across the woven mats strewn across the stable floor. He did not turn. "Mother, I..." "You are the last kind of beast I expected to find in the stable." A smile ghosted across his lips again. "The last kind of beast I expected to find in the stable, my lord." Kenshin turned as he spoke, not even trying to conceal his pleasure at the arrival of this unexpected visitor. A young girl in a simple kimono of deep blue silk leaned against the gate door. She wrinkled her pretty nose in playful distaste at his words. Their titles had long been a source of amusement for them both. For this girl was not, in fact, one of Kenshin's servants, despite what his father frequently said in private. "It's not often that you surprise me, Hattori Kenshin." As the girl spoke, her tone became flatter, almost morose. Her amusement had already begun to wane, so quickly. Too quickly. Kenshin cleared his throat, letting his smile drop, despite his wish to remain lighthearted. There were smudges across her cheek and nose. He'd have wagered 10 gold ryo that they were from the dust of polishing sand, just like when they were children. Just like when she'd helped her father, celebrated artisan Muramasa Sengo, polish weapons in the nearby smithy. Memories stirred through Kenshin, pleasant and warm. He should not, would not smile at this particular girl so familiarly again, no matter how much he wished to do so. Such a gesture would not serve them well. A grip of doubt took hold of Kenshin's throat, a terrible sensation that only ever came about in this girl's presence.
"Would you like me to leave?"
"Well, I have no intention of currying your horse for you, even if you are the fearsome dragon of Kai." Though her words were crisp, plinks of water against clay, her voice was calm. It suited her. "Amaya." A night rain. Crisp, yet calm. Kenshin gritted his teeth.
"You should not."
"You haven't brought your sword to be polished in quite some time." Amaya stepped toward him. "My father mentioned it only yesterday." She held out her left hand. "Give it to me." She spoke as though nothing were between them, as though Kenshin meant nothing to her. That same grip of doubt tightened its hold. Kenshin threw it off with a roll of his shoulders, like an unwanted burden. Better Amaya think he was nothing to her. Better for them both. The longer he thought it, the sooner it would become true. Without a word, Kenshin removed his katana from its bindings and passed it to her. Amaya unsheathed the blade from its ornate saya. Her eyes flitted across the intricate tsuba, across the copper-gilt filigree of the Hattori crest worked into the handguard. Over the gaping dragon's maw, inlaid with turquoise enamel. She stopped to tisk at the sight of the sword itself. "Do you not know by now?" Amaya scolded lightly. "Art such as this is meant to be cared for." Kenshin watched her study the grooves in the painstakingly crafted jewel steel. The notches of wear and neglect. Her eyes were soft puddles of gray. Concern etched a groove between them, one he desperately wished to smooth with a quick pass of his thumb. It was this groove, this concern for something Amaya should no longer trouble herself with, that tempered the anger in Kenshin's veins. Despite her efforts to conceal it, Muramasa Amaya always cared about things far more than she should.
"You're right," Kenshin replied. "Anything made by Muramasa-sama is meant to be cared for."
His words were laced with tender meaning. Those same soft eyes lifted to his. Unhesitatingly, "Father would agree." She paused, then glanced away. "I'll see to it that the blade is sharpened and returned to you tonight."
"There's no need."
"No." Amaya returned the katana to its saya with a smooth flick of her wrist. "Father would not want a blade he fashioned to remain in such disrepair."
She spoke as if her father, perhaps the most famed metalsmith in all the empire, would personally hone and polish the sword. But Kenshin knew Amaya would be the one to do it. Knew it with the certainty of the rising sun each dawn. A sharp pang carved a path around his heart. But he said nothing. Did nothing. It was better this way. As Amaya turned to take leave, she looked over her shoulder. If he hadn't known her better, Kenshin would have sworn he saw Amaya hesitate.
Mariko isn't dead, Kenshin. She can't possibly be dead.
I know.
Good.
Amaya nodded once.
Don't give up in your search for her.
I won't. A small smile curled up her face. His resolve broke at the sight.
Amaya.
Kenshin closed the gap between them. He wanted so badly to wipe the smudges from her cheek, to press the groove between her eyes until it vanished beneath his touch. His hand rose to her face. She pulled back.
Good evening, my lord.
Amaya bowed low. In the gesture, Kenshin saw none of her teasing, none of their usual humor. He missed it more than he could ever say. But Kenshin knew better. He stepped to one side, dipped his head in a bow. When she turned to go, Kenshin found himself moving forward, his feet obeying his heart's unspoken commands. He could not watch her walk away. Not again. Instead, Kenshin brushed past her coldly, back into the afternoon sun of the courtyard. He almost stopped short when he saw his mother standing there, waiting. She was not looking at him. Her knowing eyes were trained on Amaya. Their piercing centers followed the daughter of Murasama Sengo until the girl's slender shadow vanished around the nearest corner. Kenshin did not falter as he approached his mother. He bowed before her.
Mother.
Son.
She searched his face. For what, he could only hazard a guess.
Your sister?
Kenshin shook his head. His mother's regal shoulders sagged the smallest fraction. Only someone standing close by could ever have detected it. Here, at least, Kenshin could offer comfort. He placed a hand against her cheek.
She is alive, mother, he said. I promise you, Mariko lives.
The fire of truth blazed in her eyes.
Bring her back to us safely, Kenshin.
I will.
Then you have a plan?
Kenshin nodded. Tomorrow, I leave for the Imperial City.
You hope to find your sister in Inako?
No. His lips thinned into a hard line.
I hope to find answers.
Many kinds of strength.
Mariko had never known she could hate anyone with such deep-seated ferocity. She'd long considered the sentiment an exercise in futility.
Hatred served no purpose, except to plague its bearer. But these last few hours had proven her wrong. She hated all these men, every last one of them, with more fervency than she'd ever imagined possible. Even the recent edicts of her parents had not elicited this kind of furor. Of course, her arranged marriage had provoked a reaction, certainly bitterness, even rage. A rash of emotions Mariko had struggled to contend with for several weeks. But hatred? Never. Today, her thoughts were consumed by murderous retribution. Mariko had dreamed of setting fire to the Black Clan's camp no less than 10 times in the past hour. She'd plotted, allowed a plan to weave through her mind like a tapestry across a loom. Mariko had fantasized about laying kindling through the brush with great care under cover of night. She'd imagined rigging her own set of traps, naturally ones far more ingenious than any the Black Clan could ever concoct. In her mind, she'd carefully trailed a thin string soaked in pitch to a previously devised shelter. Then she'd calmly set the string to flame, pausing only to watch the Black Clan burn like the hell fiends they were. The vision materialized, a welcome respite from her reality. Just as a small rock descended from the sky, pelting her on the head. The pain blossomed across her skull like a dribble of steaming water. Her dream of revenge took shape once again, growing ever more vivid in detail. Now, the very demons of the forest rose at her command, ready to wreak their ghostly havoc. Another rock glanced across her shoulder, a bigger one this time. Mariko refused to cry out, to fall to the ground in abject misery.
"Move faster, boy," a harsh voice intoned nearby.
Her lips were parched, her knees were trembling. Nevertheless, Mariko picked up four more logs and braced them against her chest. She tried to channel bravery as a source of strength, but it did not answer. Strangely, it was fear that drove her forward. Fear that she would fail in her task to learn the truth. Fear that the Black Clan would discover she was not a boy. She hadn't eaten since yesterday afternoon, unless she counted the muddy pond water she'd spat from her lips this morning. The last thing Mariko had had to drink was the sake from the night before, that same terrible night she'd fallen into captivity. Her tormentor ambled alongside her, kicking dark soil into her path with undisguised relish.
"Only four?" he said. "At this rate, we'll be here all day."
The boy sneered, his yellowed eyes cutting in half.
"I've never seen a weaker excuse for a man."
Mariko's chest hollowed at his words, her heart missing a beat. The boy's gaze did not leave hers, even while he tossed another small rock into the air, only to catch it and toss it again. Toying with her. Mariko braced herself for the pebble's inevitable strike. Sure enough, even as she quickened her pace, the stone hit the back of her leg, biting into her calf with all the menace of a tiny woodland creature. Indignation bubbled in her throat, the same throat that desperately needed a drink of water. Her tormentor stepped before Mariko, savoring her obvious distress.
Ren,
the boy with the murder eyes and the spiked topknot. It turned out her earliest suspicions had been correct. Ren's haunted gaze did indeed mask something far darker within. A boy who smiled in the face of suffering, as though he derived great joy from it. Ren had been designated Mariko's watcher, and he'd taken to the task as only a boy such as he undoubtedly would. Like a fox to a swallow's nest.
"Did you hear me, Lord Weakling?"
Ren angled closer, his expression increasingly sinister. A small log dangled from his fingertips. Mariko closed her eyes, her posture rigid. So far she'd managed to maintain her composure. She hadn't cried once, hadn't so much as asked for a drop of water. When death inevitably came for her, Hattori Mariko would not be sniveling and wretched. She would be in control of her emotions, no matter the cost. With his free hand, Ren wrapped his knuckles on the side of her head. Mariko's eyes flew open. He'd touched her, struck her. A wash of anger reddened her vision. She quickly blinked it away.
Hattori Mariko was a warrior now.
And a warrior is never weak. Ren smiled down at Mariko, as if he could see past her eyes into the ugly truth of her soul. Though the boy stood scarcely taller than she, he reveled in the fact. Mariko suspected he did not always come across men of shorter stature. Unfortunately, this near parity of height did not grant her any advantage. Ren was stockier, his musculature hard-earned. She could see the scars and calluses along his hands and forearms. This boy was used to punishing work. When Ren caught her studying him, he snorted derisively.
"I said, did you hear me, you pathetic excuse for a—"
"I heard you."
Ren's smile faded. He plopped the log in his hand atop the four already pressed against Mariko's chest. She faltered for the first time, nearly lost hold of her burden.
"Move faster!"
Ren unsheathed one of the hooked swords from his back, a deadly pair of weapons modeled after garden sickles.
"Boss said if I don't like your work, I can cut you into pieces and feed you to Akuma."
He pressed the flat end of the sickle to his own neck, mocking her even further. Mariko breathed deeply. She continued on her way, ignoring the pain building in her arms. Ignoring the dry burn in her throat and the sudden threat of tears. Sweat marred her sight, slicked her palms. How she wished she could run away, vanish into the woods like a ghost. Never once look back. The thought gripped her, took hold of her for an instant.
Chiyo, Nobutada.
The chance to prove my worth.
4 steps.
4 steps were all Mariko could take before she crumbled to the forest floor, the logs tumbling from her grasp. Ren laughed darkly.
This will be a long day for you. Too bad it will also be your last.
Mariko pushed her face into the earth, her pulse thrumming in her ears. The soil smelled fragrant and alive. She wanted to burrow into it, disappear, dig her way through to the other side.
Get up.
A new tormentor. One whose voice Mariko readily recognized, readily hated, without question.
Get up.
He was closer now, his voice even more gruff. She pressed her hands into the earth and lifted to her knees. Okami peered down at her, his arms crossed, his expression awed. A mixture of boredom and predatory amusement.
Stand.
A brief moment passed in silent revolt. Mariko met his gaze, surprised to feel a sudden flare of courage ignite within her, the same courage she'd sought to channel all day.
Okami did not look away, though one of his brows rose in question. Useless. He inhaled through his nose. Utterly useless.
With that, the wolf turned, dismissing Mariko in almost the same breath. The anger that had been lying dormant for so long erupted in her chest. Mariko staggered to her feet, gripping a log in one hand. She wielded it like a club, aiming for his imperious head. Okami leaned out of the log's path without missing a step. His expression did not even register her attempt to strike. Still bored, but perhaps a tad less amused.
He thinks I'm pitiful, worthless.
Fury tingling in her fingertips, Mariko hurled the log again. The force nearly took her from her feet. Okami rolled across the forest floor, quicker than lightning over a lake. When he stood, he brandished a long branch in his left hand. With it, he struck Mariko once on her elbow. A burst of prickling pain shot down her arm. The log fell to the ground. When Mariko curled her fingers into a fist, readying to lunge, Okami hit her on the shoulder with the same branch. Her hand opened of its own volition, resisted her attempt to reform it into a fist. For the first time since she'd been tasked with moving logs from one forsaken corner of the forest to another, Mariko yelled in guttural protest. Not out of pain, but out of hatred.
Pressure points.
The Hellspawn was abusing her pressure points.
You've had enough, then?
Okami said as he calmly brushed forest debris off his black kosode. Mariko exhaled in a miserable huff.
You're cheating.
You're useless. I am not useless. She began scrubbing away the dirt from her face, wiping it on her sleeve, as she'd often seen soldiers do. Okami raised the branch before him, level with his shoulder.
Prove it.
What? She blinked. Beside her, Ren laughed ominously, stepping aside to lean against a gnarled tree trunk.
Take the branch from me, Okami said.
Mariko's eyes went wide. Her mind opened to a myriad of possibilities, each of which she dismissed in rapid succession. She scanned the length of him, his impressive height, a body trained for warfare wrapped in sinuous muscle. The long arm extended her way, fingers expertly coiled around the branch, fully prepared to teach her a lasting lesson. Trying her best to convey disdain, Mariko spat the last of the soil from her mouth. What will you give me if I take the branch from you?
You are not in a position to negotiate.
He angled his head, the scar through his lips appearing silver in a shaft of sunlight.
At least tell me why I was brought here. What you intend to do with me?
I have no intentions to do anything with anyone.
His black eyes glittered. Besides sleep and eat and drink away my days. Mariko refrained from frowning in judgment. Why such a lazy boy would choose to work in service to the Black Clan was beyond her. If you won't answer any of my questions, there's little incentive for me to fight you.
She let the words fall from her lips like rocks down a mountainside, in a rough and coarse tumble.
Especially since I know I will lose.
You will lose because you are slow and untrained.
I suppose that is what makes me useless in your eyes, she said. That, and my obvious lack of strength.
Another bout of dark laughter arose from Ren, a laughter that only served to irritate Mariko further.
There are many kinds of strength, Lord Lackbeard.
The branch dropped to Okami's side. His tone was thoughtful.
Strength of the heart. Strength of the mind.
Though she was surprised to hear these sentiments uttered by this boy, Mariko was careful to conceal it.
Show me a warrior who believes that to be true, and I will endeavor to take the branch from you.
A wry grin began to curl up Okami's mouth.
Be as swift as the wind, as silent as the forest, as fierce as the fire, as unshakable as the mountain. And you can do anything. Even take this branch from me.
Mariko snorted, catching herself before crossing her arms as her mother would.
Needlessly cryptic, especially since mere words make all things possible.
I'm glad we agree.
He raised the branch again.
Take the branch from me, Lord Lackbeard.
Her eyes narrowed to slits.
Words do not make all things possible. Ideas are the seeds of possibility.
Without words, ideas are nothing but voiceless thoughts.
Okami held the branch steady, unflinching.
Without ideas, words would never have come into being.
Fine, then. Without words, give me an idea.
Another slow, taunting smile.
Now take the branch.
Her ire spiking, Mariko returned his unwavering stare. Though Okami's expression remained one of detached amusement, a flame sparked behind his eyes like a sun at midnight. The sight prompted her to make a final decision, one of dishonor, one she was sure to regret.
I prefer to fight battles I know I can win.
With that, Mariko bent to pick up the log closest to Okami. Just as he lowered the branch a second time, she shot to standing, ramming her full weight into his injured right shoulder. The one she knew still bore a fresh wound from the giant's Kanabo swing the night before. The wolf grunted loudly as they both fell to the ground in a tangled heap. Mariko landed on top of him, lunging for the branch, but Okami flipped her onto her stomach, forcing every last bit of air from her body by leaning on her with unnecessary intensity. Damp soil trickled into her mouth, causing her to sputter and retch and flail. Mariko tried to shove her elbow into his face, but was met with nothing more than wry laughter.
I owe you an injury, Sanada Takeo, Okami whispered in her ear. And I pay my debts.
He hauled her to her feet as though she were nothing more than a sack of air.
Now get back to work.
Humiliation took root in Mariko's chest, tugging at her center like a fish hook. She swiped the soil from her mouth and straightened her dirty kosode, hoping to pierce his resolve as he had hers.
This is a waste of time. If your glorious leader had granted me use of a wagon, I would have been done moving these logs hours ago.
It was a sound argument, one he, of all people, should readily agree with, as the wolf did not relish expending unnecessary effort. Okami paused to rub his shoulder. For an instant, Mariko thought he would agree, especially when she caught a trace of humor on his face. Then he swept his black hair from his forehead as though he was banishing the thought.
If this is the last task of your life, it's never a waste of time to do it thoroughly.
A cold current of fear overshadowed Mariko's anger.
You don't truly mean that. If you intended to kill me, you would have done it already. Why have you brought me here? To what end?
She focused the last of her fear into something pointed, sharp.
And if this is indeed the last task of my life, I'd rather be doing anything else, thinking anything else, than this.
You'd waste your last day in thought.
Okami stared down at her, unblinking.
I would spend it thinking something meaningful, doing something honorable. like exposing the location of your camp, or bringing about an end to your band of bloodthirsty thieves?
Thinking? Ren interjected as he spat in the dirt by her feet. Knowledge feeds no one, nor does it win any wars.
I find your position on this matter unsurprising. Mariko did not even bother glancing toward the boy with the spiked topknot.
Honorable? Okami shifted closer, his hand still pressed to his shoulder. The coppery scent of fresh blood suffused the air. Do you consider attacking a wounded man without warning an act of honor?
Color flooded Mariko's cheeks. She'd known she would regret that decision the moment she'd made it. Honor was a fundamental tenet of Bushido, and her choice to deceive Okami and take advantage of his weakness was, without a doubt, a dishonorable one. She swallowed. Was pushed to that action.
As many men often are.
Don't
trouble yourself by explaining. Honor bears no weight with me.
The wolf continued studying her.
And I find knowledge a poison to a weak mind.
A litany of retorts collected in Mariko's throat, but none seemed good enough, wise enough. Instead, she chose to defeat words with silence. With an idea.
Never doubt. Never fear. Never overthink.
Okami watched her as he spoke, as though he was searching for something beyond her.
That is the only way to stay alive.
A glimmer of reason shone in his words. It unsettled her even further. Mariko's lips pressed together, the skin in their centers cracked as the salt of her blood touched her tongue. Anger tingled across her skin. Anger at him. Anger at herself. How she wished she had a perfect retort at the ready, one she could fire back like a polished stone. Wordlessly, she bent to retrieve the fallen logs. When Mariko stood once more, she thought she saw Okami wince as though a lantern had been shined in his eyes. He stretched, then yawned.
On second thought, take Lord Lackbeard to Yoshi, Okami said to Ren. Make sure he eats something. A well-watered tree yields sweeter fruit.
As the wolf turned to leave, courage pushed Mariko into his path a final time. Answer at least one question. After drugging me and dragging me here against my will, I'm owed that much. He waited, his features coolly indifferent. Mariko breathed deep. Am I a prisoner, or am I a servant?
Okami paused before responding. We choose what we are in any situation, be it a word or an idea.
With a small smile, he walked away. I dislike this boy immensely. Before she had a chance to organize her thoughts, Ren yanked her to his side. Mariko watched from the corner of her eye while Okami strapped his bow across his back. The wolf mounted a gray horse and rode from camp, nodding in salute to the guards patrolling the perimeter. How Mariko wished she could best him at something, wished she could trounce him in all things. The wolf wasn't as clever as he believed himself to be. Mariko found herself contemplating ways to destroy him, to watch him struggle and beg for mercy. But she could not waste her focus on such petty emotions, not when there were so many more pressing concerns at her heels. Mariko needed to learn why the Black Clan had brought her to their encampment. Was it possible they'd somehow discovered who she was? Had she been taken hostage? Ice curled down her backbone at the thought. As quickly as the fear rippled over her, it melted away. If the Black Clan had known who she was, they would have killed her already. And Mariko would not have been allowed even the limited freedom she'd been granted thus far. Mariko sighed. Each step she took brought with it another question. She needed to know why the Black Clan had taken her to their camp, who they were exactly. But most of all, she needed to discover why they'd been sent to kill her, and by whom. She glanced at Ren sidelong as they made their way toward the center of the encampment. Through the haze of the afternoon sun, His yellowed eyes reminded her of a snake lying in wait in the summer grass, how it would slither in the shadows while it pursued its prey, lulling everything around it into a false sense of safety. Perhaps the best way for Mariko to gain answers was for her to do the same, to stop being difficult, to start paying attention. Follow orders. Engender trust. First, she needed to find a way to be useful to the Black Clan. Then, when the men were lulled into a false sense of safety, she would strike. Discomfort twisted through her chest as she pondered this course of action, for it was not one of honor. It was one of deceit. Unsettlingly more so than her choice to don the garments of a boy and seek out the Black Clan. A true warrior would face her enemies without flinching, not slither about in the shade. But there was so much Mariko wished to know, so much she wished to learn. And she was beginning to realize that honor did not serve her well in a den of thieves. Briefly, Mariko toyed with the idea of asking Ren how Okami's powers worked. The fool thought knowledge did not win wars. Knowledge was everything in a war. Especially in a war of wits. She could trick the evil twit into revealing damaging information, learn how Okami was able to move as he did, why the use of his powers seemed to take such a harsh toll on him. As she glanced one last time over her shoulder, Mariko discovered she also wanted to know where the wolf was going, and to whom. But for now, she would lie in the shadows and wait. Weakness of the Spirit. The man with the wooden leg hovered over a steaming pot, peering into its contents with the focus of a mother hen. He paused to stoke the fire beneath the iron cauldron. A sooty box bellows groaned as he fed the flames with a blast of air. As Mariko had first suspected, this Yoshi was the cook. When another gust of steam rose from the pot, Yoshi stepped away, something akin to a smile spreading across his face. He was slightly portly in the middle. His reddened forehead shone with sweat, and one of his ears appeared larger than the other. Yoshi leaned forward when Mariko and Ren approached. His eyes were still fixed on the contents of the pot.
"Yoshi-san!"
Ren prodded Mariko closer by digging his shoulder into her back. She refrained from scowling when she stumbled forward.
"Are you still here?"
Yoshi muttered without even turning around. His dismissive tone reminded Mariko of her father, though Yoshi appeared several years younger than Hattori Kano. She pursed her lips.
"I'm not certain I have a choice."
She pitched her voice low, gave it a grating quality, as though she'd swallowed a mouthful of sand. It was true Mariko had decided to cooperate, but she knew only a fool would appear pleased to be the Black Clan's captive. At least, not so soon after being taken prisoner.
"Of course you have a choice,"
Yoshi said.
"I fail to see what it is."
He turned to face her fully, a long wooden spoon hanging from one fist.
"You could run."
His tone was circumspect, the lines around his mouth deep set. Mariko paused in consideration, wondered what could prompt Yoshi to make such a point.
"I'd be caught."
"It's true,"
he nodded, drumming the spoon against his thigh in almost rhythmic fashion.
"You would likely be caught."
"Then why bother with the risk?"
"Without risk, life is far too predictable."
Mariko stared at him, forcing her expression blank. She had not expected to find a philosopher buried beneath the cook's sworn exterior.
"We are born, we live, we die. All that matters in life is predictable. A rock settles into the soil. A blossom gives off a fragrance.
A blossom can split through a rock, given enough time."
"And enough sunlight, enough water, enough..."
Yoshi laughed sharply. The sound warmed through her in a way that troubled her. Mariko did not want to like any member of the Black Clan, much less this portly fellow brandishing a wooden spoon. Yoshi continued laughing, his surliness causing the sound to spike into the patches of light above. He turned back toward his precious pot of steaming liquid, lowering the spoon into its depths with that same sharpened awareness. Her curiosity growing with each passing moment, Mariko leaned closer to peer into the boiling vat, determined to see what Yoshi labored so painstakingly to prepare. The bubbling liquid shifted as he stirred. A familiar object swirled into view.
Eggs?
You seem disappointed. Yoshi eyed her askance. Mariko frowned. They're just eggs. His lips protruded in a scowl as Yoshi removed one egg from the pot and gingerly dropped it into another bowl of water nearby.
These are not just any eggs.
Using the tip of his spoon, Yoshi began rolling the egg in the water. The silence that descended on them stretched uncomfortably thin. Mariko could no longer keep quiet. Why are you washing the egg after boiling it?
This is cold water,
Yoshi said as he took the egg from its chilled bath and raised it into the light.
Two extremes make for one perfectly cooked egg.
He tapped the rounded end of the egg against the side of the pot. Then he did the same to the pointed end. He lifted the egg to his lips and blew hard as though he meant to cool it entirely in a single breath. The egg flew from its shell into Yoshi's waiting hand.
Eat it.
He offered it to her. The last time Mariko had consumed an offering by a member of the Black Clan, she'd awoken to find herself thrown across the back of a horse. Nevertheless, hunger overcame her the instant she took hold of the egg. A stronger warrior would have refused to eat any food offered by the enemy, but in this case, she was not a strong warrior. She was a starving sparrow. Mariko took a small bite. The white of the egg was cool and creamy, light as a feather. Its center was the warm yellow of a dandelion. Steam rose from it in a perfect curl. In short, it was quite possibly the most delicious thing Mariko had eaten in her entire life. She opened her mouth to swallow the remaining bite whole.
Wait!
Yoshi said, startling her still. From a small earthenware jar, he removed a piece of pickled ginger half the size of his palm. Moving faster than Mariko's eyes could follow, Yoshi yanked a hooked dagger from the collection at his belt and sliced two paper-thin slivers of ginger on top of the egg. Then he prodded her to eat by raising his brows. Mariko had been wrong before. This was the best thing she'd ever eaten in her entire life. Though her mouth was full, Mariko began offering muffled words of gratitude. It galled her to be giving thanks to a member of the Black Clan, but she'd already made her choice. For however long they kept her here, she would follow their orders, find a way to be useful to them, and wait in the grass to strike. As Mariko started to speak, a rock pinged against the side of the iron cauldron, surprising her. The precious egg spilled from her mouth onto the earth. Before Mariko could think to react, Yoshi yanked another dagger from his belt and hurled it into the bushes at her back. Ren shouted as the dagger struck the tree trunk a hair's breadth from his shoulder. The branches around him shuddered from the impact.
"Mealtime is sacred," Yoshi scolded. "You know this better than anyone." "Boss said I could do as I pleased with a new recruit," Ren fumed. "Even told me I could kill him if he broke any of our rules."
"New recruit? Rules?" Mariko struggled to stay emotionless as a flurry of thoughts whirled through her mind. Yoshi's already flushed face reddened further. In that moment, Mariko knew she was right to keep silent. Ren had just revealed something he was clearly not meant to divulge. Yoshi took a deliberate step in Ren's direction, a step laced with warning.
"He did not say you could do as you pleased with me. And as long as Sanada Takeo is with me, I insist you leave him be." "Fine," Ren said, anger flashing in his yellowed eyes. "Enjoy your meal, Lord Weakling, for it might be your last."
As he yelled his threat, he fought to untangle himself from the brambles at his feet. Then he spun away, his expression promising a fierce reprisal in the near future. predictable, at all turns. Mariko stared at the ruined egg lying on the ground. She contemplated picking it up and finishing it, dirt and all. Such a shame to waste something so delicious. "If that was to be my last meal," Mariko murmured, "how fitting is it that it fell from my lips before I could eat it?"
The previously rough timbre of Yoshi's laughter was gentler now.
"Despite what I thought at first glance, you do have a flair for the dramatic. As to this being your last meal, that will depend on what Ranmaru decides."
He transferred another egg from the boiling vat into the cool bath.
"Though I must say, for someone on the brink of death, you do appear remarkably calm."
Mariko gnawed at her lower lip, once more considering what kind of information Yoshi intended to wheedle from her with his surly brand of kindness. What kind of information she could, in turn, wheedle from him. "I am not calm," she said finally.
"It's a constant effort to quell my fear." "Then why bother?"
"Because I do not wish to appear weak."
Another smile tugged at his mouth as Yoshi unshelled a new egg for Mariko.
His kindness could be a tactic, a way to wear down her defenses, extreme cruelty tempered by extreme consideration, much like the egg. It could all be a trick. But the egg, that simple egg, was so wonderful, so perfect. How could anyone who would take such care to prepare a simple egg truly be bad? Mariko sighed to herself. If Yoshi's kindness was a lie or a trick, she would let herself fall prey, all in service to a greater goal. Follow orders, engender trust, strike when they least expect it. She would learn who these men were, whom they served, and why they tried to kill her. When the bushes behind Mariko rustled once more, Yoshi yanked another small dagger from his belt and took aim. A yelp and the scurry of fleeing feet followed. While she chewed, Mariko marveled at the fluidity of his movements. His wooden limb did not hamper him, nor did it grant him any advantage in that heedless way of stories. It was not a gift, nor was it a blessing. It simply was, just as he simply was. And Yoshi threw daggers as though he was born to it, like an eagle taking flight. This realization prompted her to consider a new idea. Perhaps true weakness is weakness of the spirit. "How long did it take you to learn to throw a kunai like that?" Mariko asked with unconcealed admiration.
"Most of my life."
Her eyes dropped to the intricate leather belt at his hip, to the array of polished blades, each of varying shape and size. "What is the purpose behind having so many different kinds of daggers?"
"Some kunai are better to throw short distances. Others are better for longer ones. The remaining ones? Well, that's among the many secrets I possess."
He snorted. Mariko thought of Ren and his pebbles. "I wish I possessed this skill." Her lips quirked to one side. "Today of all days, a skill like this would have served me well."
"You could learn. Given enough training, anyone could."
"I'm not so sure." Lines of doubt settled across her face. "Are you also going to inform me I need to be as swift as a fire so I may move mountains in the wind?" Yoshi laughed loudly. Mariko caught herself before she could smile. "And you shouldn't dismiss your abilities. It insults both you and me at the same time." Another raise of his brows. She suspected people did not often speak to Yoshi in such a direct manner.
"Is that so?"
"Yes. You insult yourself by dismissing skills that took you a lifetime to develop. At the same time, you insult me by stating that I need only try, as though the only hindrance is my own lack of effort." Mariko's speech grew more rapid with each passing word. She took a deep breath before continuing. "To even attempt something, one must first believe in the possibility, and then be granted an opportunity." As Mariko finished, she glanced meaningfully at the portly fellow. Yoshi's grin turned knowing.
"Alas, Sanada Takeo, You will not be granted the opportunity to throw a dagger here. But your attempt to try is duly noted and appreciated.
Not an attempt, rather an unceasing challenge of life, she mused, to learn, even when knowledge itself may fail you.
Rather the unceasing challenge of youth,
Yoshi said dryly as he lowered more eggs into the simmering pot.
Not to worry. I can promise that all great opportunities in life follow some form of struggle.
May I ask what it is you struggle with most? Mariko prodded. Yoshi rubbed a sleeve on the sweat gathering above his brow. Then he wandered to the bushes to retrieve the blade he'd thrown at Ren, prying it from where the kunai was embedded in the tree trunk. He lifted the dagger into the light, then lovingly restored it to its place at his hip.
"Learning a new blade," he replied.
A groove formed at the bridge of Mariko's nose. Yoshi said,
"Every blade has its own path. Every handle is different. Every tang is unique. The balance of every dagger is its own."
Again, Mariko lingered in thought. Would consistency not make it better? Consistency in the forging of the steel and the forming of the blade.
Consistency is not enough. It doesn't account for chance, and there was always a chance the handle will strike the mark instead of the blade. No amount of skill can thwart it every time.
Mariko studied the hooked dagger Yoshi had used to shave slices of pickled ginger. Two blades affixed in their centers like a cross would work better. She considered further. Or perhaps even three, like a star.
Why not four?
Yoshi said with amusement.
Alas, you will never see me wielding a cumbersome thing like that. Any effective kunai would need to be light.
In one flowing motion, he whipped a blade from its sheath and hurled it toward the same branch.
Quick!
Mariko considered the quivering handle. Yoshi had thrown it to strike the exact same place as before. It fit into the previous divot at a near identical angle. The way the handle shook, trembled into solid motion, brought to mind Okami and his mysterious abilities. Mariko frowned. She did not wish to be reminded of anything she did not yet understand, especially something pertaining to the wolf. Mariko lowered into a crouch, picked up a twig, began to draw. Indeed, why not four?
Chuboko.
That night, Mariko woke from her slumber to the sound of screaming. It startled her into awareness, like a splash of icy water. Her forehead grazed the rock she'd been using as a pillow, her fingernails dug into the damp soil. The screams echoing through the forest were the screams of a tortured animal, not a man. It couldn't be a man. No human could make sounds like these. As the screams continued, each beat of her heart crashed through her, a drum pulled taut beneath her skin. She opened one eye, trying to focus on the forest's shadows, trying to drown out the sounds of pure suffering. Men with torches were massing in the distance. Several rings of fire blurred through the trees. For a moment, Mariko considered running. The Black Clan was distracted. Perhaps they would not notice her slipping into the night. Perhaps she could find her way out of the forest without tripping any of their supposed traps. Perhaps. A foot kicked the small of her back, frightening her all the more.
Get up.
It was Ren.
Now.
The tenor of his voice was surprisingly sad. Mariko scrambled to her feet, too unnerved by the screams to protest. She followed Ren as he wove through the trees, his torch held high. Save for the screaming, the forest had grown eerily silent. The wind did not stir through the branches. Nor did Mariko hear the sound of any life in the air about her. Only the crackle of Ren's torch. The snapping of twigs beneath her bare feet. And the screams. Ren walked silently, Mariko at his back. As they made their way toward the cluster of torches, the screaming grew louder. Mariko refrained from covering her ears.
They approached several members of the Black Clan, standing around the base of a tree, its branches twisting into the darkness like skeletal fingers stretching for the sky. At first glance, the tree appeared completely normal. What Mariko saw once her eyes adjusted to the shadows almost elicited a scream from her own lips. At the base of the tree was a young man. His limbs were tangled in the roots, roots that had risen from the soil, wrapping around him like a thorny vine. Thin rivulets of blood dripped down his face, down the skin of his arms, across the meat of his stomach. The thorns had pierced through the young man's skin. All over his body, the vines squeezed tight, their thorns cutting deeper and deeper. But the horror did not stop there. When the thud of her pulse lessened, Mariko heard a slurping sound emit from the vines, followed by the rustle of dark leaves bursting to life in its skeletal branches. The vines, the tree itself, was feeding on the boy. The tree was draining him of blood. He screamed again, the sound amplified by raw anguish. Ranmaru and Okami stood before him, watching. Mariko wanted to plead for mercy. Surely they could cut the boy away from the branches, save him from such a slow, horrific death. She reached for a thorny branch with a mind to rip it from the ground itself. Quicker than a spark, Okami seized her by the elbow. "Don't touch it." She blinked, the warmth of his hand searing through the thin hemp of her stolen kosode. He looked strangely severe, much more so than ever before. His dark eyes roved across her face. Whatever he saw there briefly softened his expression.
"If you touch it, the Juboko will snare you, too," he said.
Horrified by this revelation, Mariko's jaw fell slack. Her eyes widened at the dying boy before her. Ranmaru glanced her way.
"Don't look on him with pity."
The boy screamed again. His cries were becoming weaker with each passing moment. "He was sent to find our camp, to find it and murder us in our sleep, like a treacherous snake." "Even the most treacherous of snakes don't deserve to die this way," Mariko said hoarsely. Ren started at her words. His glazed eyes flickered toward her, his expression unnerving even in the darkness.
"He is not a snake. He is something far worse."
One of Okami's fists clenched around a piece of stained cloth. Mariko caught the edge of a white crest in its folds, but she could not make out the family, nor could she make out anything of note. The young man's screams had become soundless. His mouth hung open for a beat, only to shudder shut, his teeth chattering like insects scuttling across stone. The tree slurped again, and a sundry of black flowers burst into bloom. Her horror abounded with each passing moment. Mariko wanted to tear her eyes away from the sight, tear them away from the truth. She briefly considered asking Ren why he had brought her here, why they had forced her to witness this horror. "You could end it," Mariko looked toward Ranmaru. As she struggled to keep her voice level, her eyes drifted to Okami's face, to the torchlight wavering around its carved hollows. "You could end his suffering," she said to him, drawn to a sudden need for goodness in the ghastliness around her. "Don't leave him to die like this. He's just a boy." Mariko chewed her lower lip. "A boy, like me." As soon as she uttered the words, understanding dawned on her. Understanding of why she had been brought to witness this horror. Okami's gaze remained level and clear, his eyes so focused, even amidst such suffering, locked on hers. Black and shining, like the onyx embedded in the hilt of her father's sword.
"We are what we do."
Though Okami's words sounded fierce, weariness tinged their edges.
"This boy came to our home, intent on murdering us. He and his kind must pay."
Again, His fist tightened around the stained cloth and its obscured crest. "We are so much more than what we do," Mariko drew closer, as if nearness could invoke a sense of truth. "We are..." She searched her mind for the right things to say. "Our thoughts, our memories, our beliefs." Her eyes dropped to the dying boy, to the evil tree, slowly draining him of life. "This tree is not the forest," she said softly. "It is but one part."
"No. A murderer is a murderer. A thief is a thief."
Okami bent his head toward hers, equally firm in his conviction.
"In this life, believe in action and action alone."
Mariko's fingernails dug into her palms. She resisted the urge to grab Okami by the shoulders and shake him into reason. He did not balk, nor did he move to help. It was Ranmaru who finally crouched before the dying boy. When the leader of the Black Clan spoke, his voice was gentle, almost soothing.
"Many years ago, there were three young men who grew up together near a forest not so dissimilar to this one."
He mopped the sweat from the boy's brow with a clean piece of muslin. The boy gasped, Mariko's chest pulled tight.
"When they were children, they played together, studied together, challenged each other as only friends can do. When they became older, one turned toward justice, another toward honor."
Ranmaru's voice lowered. "The last, toward ambition."
"In time, the three young men became warriors in their own right, each with sons of their own. As they settled into age and influence, the ambitious man realized his friend, who valued honor above all else, would never compromise on anything, even for the sake of those dearest to him."
With quiet solemnity, Ranmaru reached for the glittering hilt of the katana at his side.
"So the ambitious man manipulated his remaining friend, the one who valued justice above all. With the skill of a tailor, the ambitious man threaded lies into truth, planted seeds of doubt. He made the man who valued justice believe their honorable friend would undermine all they tried to achieve."
The boy's gaze was riveted on the leader of the Black Clan. As Ranmaru unsheathed his katana, he inhaled through his nose. Understanding softened the lines on the dying boy's face. He nodded feebly.
"When their honorable friend was accused of treason, the ambitious man turned to the last of their trio, hearkening to that same pervasive sense of justice."
Ranmaru stopped in his speech, wordlessly asking for permission. The dying boy's eyes darted from the sword to Ranmaru. He nodded once more, gratefully. With a gentle nod of his own, Ranmaru pressed the tip of his katana above the boy's heart.
"And so the friend who valued justice above all else executed his honorable friend, in front of his friend's only son. But when he realized what he had done, the mistake he had made, he tried to balance the scales, to right this terrible wrong and bring about renewed justice."
From where he stood before her, Mariko watched Okami's jaw harden.
The sound of a blade slicing through skin rose into the night as Ranmaru pushed forward, swift and sure.
A thankful smile upon his lips, the boy's eyelids opened sluggishly one last time as the life fled from his body.
"For his efforts to right this wrong, the man who valued justice was hung by his feet in Yedo Bay, drowned before his family."
Ranmaru slanted his head, as though he wished to speak directly to Okami, but could not.
"In the dead of night, the son of this drowned man, a wolf in his own right, set fire to the tent of his father's accuser and fled into the mountains." The air around them churned with unspoken thoughts, countless unuttered sentiments across years and generations. Yet Mariko understood, all the same. The tale Ranmaru told was of him and Okami, a tale of two boys who had lost their fathers to an ambitious man.